Hello and welcome to Inside Property with me, Richard Blanco. Excuse my rather husky voice today, but it's great to be back for our third series. In April 2018, the Westminster government announced a raft of proposals to regulate letting agents in England. They asked a working group to deliberate, and we await their report, probably this summer, before concrete measures are eventually put in place. Some proposals, such as client money protection and the tenants' fees ban, are already set to come into force in April and June 2019. So in this programme, we're asking how well is the consumer being served by letting agents and how is this juggernaut of regulations going to affect the letting agent sector. We will also be discussing the role of trading standards in enforcing good practice for landlords and tenants alike. And I have a veritable panel here to help me with this topic. David Cox is CEO of Arla Property Mark. Fiona Exley is a senior trading standards officer and speaks for London Trading Standards. And on the line from Hertfordshire, business transfer agent and veteran commentator Adam Walker. Well, I wanted to start with you, first of all, Fiona, about the need for reform. And, you know, indeed, how local authorities, I know you've had a lot of experience in London, have been trying to improve what letting agents do and improve standards. I've looked at the Newham scheme, which is something I'm aware of, and I know you'll be aware of as a London-wide practitioner. They have 159 agents in Newham, which they reported in October 2017. And in fact, they have a star rating scheme for their agents. And 16% actually had compliance failings, and only 29% were members of professional bodies. Do you think that's pretty typical of London boroughs, or did they have a particular problem?
It's difficult to say because I think the London market in itself is particular to the very different from the rest of the country, and boroughs themselves are very different as well. The different letting markets are very different. But I would say that's particularly, it probably is typical of what's going on in London. I mean, I represent a trading standards lettings group in London. And we work together to try and support each other in kind of developing best practice and you know, enforcing the regulations that we're required to enforce to do with the letting agent sector, really, which is relatively new regulation to us. So the first piece of legislation that was letting agent specific only came in October 2014 with a requirement to belong to a redress scheme.
And how bad is some of the behaviour that we're seeing, Fiona?
Well, I think there's two things. I think one thing is I've only been, because trading standards officers haven't had very much contact with the letting sector until 2014, I've worked in two London authorities since then. And I think there's two elements which you get in any kind of situation to do with trading. You'll get an element that are rogues, which, you know, they will be flouting the laws. They will be kind of taking deposits both from landlords and tenants, not giving them back. They will be misdescribing things. They will be claiming to be members of professional bodies when they're not. They may be doing something which is called bait and switch, when they may be advertising properties to entice tenants to go in and they're not providing that actual property when it comes to the letting. So there's that kind of criminal aspect that's going on. And obviously that is only the minority, which happens in any particular business sector, I think. But then there's kind of the profession as a whole. And I suppose what I've found personally in working kind of with the sector in two London authorities over the last 4 years, really, is that legislation has come in, but it's taken a long time for letting agents to take it on board, really. We did a survey in London Trading Standards last June before our national conference. And that was 3 years after the legislation came in to do with, you know, requirement to display fees and whether you're a member of a client money protection scheme. And I suppose we felt really disappointed then that when we did the survey, it was a web survey, so it was a web compliance survey last June. 53% were not displaying a CMP statement saying whether they were not a member of a client money protection scheme. And 31% were still not displaying their tenant fees. 37% were not displaying their landlord fees. And 22% were not displaying which redress body they're a membership of.
Well, we'll come on to enforcement later on in the programme. It's very interesting to hear those figures, Fiona. Now, Isabel Thompson, who's CEO of NOWS, which is another of the bodies that represents letting agents, says that creating a level playing field will eliminate the poor practice and dishonesty that currently tarnishes the sector and ensure a safe and fair experience for tenants and landlords. And that was back in April 2018. there's kind of been a breakout of consensus, hasn't there, in many ways, David? Most letting agents' bodies actually welcome a lot of this regulation, don't they?
Yes, we do. And as Fiona has just said, the first piece of actual letting agent-specific regulation wasn't until 2014. You know, we think about the rafts of legislation governing landlords, but governing other types of business. But as it stands today, all you need to do is join a redress scheme in order to practice as a letting agent, with no knowledge, no experience, no qualifications, nothing, and you can be handling for landlords what is their largest asset after the home in which they live, and for tenants, it is managing their home. We have certainly argued for more than 20 years that you need a much more robust regulatory framework to make sure that these people who are managing homes know what they're doing.
And, I mean, how do you feel about the extent of poor practice, David? I mean, the National Landlords Agency says 1.30% of its complaints to its advice on were about agents. And it seems that agents get it from both ends as well, from tenants and from landlords, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that 30% is probably about right. We look at the market as a whole. Arla has over 9,500 members at the moment. It represents probably about 60% of the industry. And therefore, that means that 40% of the industry aren't members of a professional body, probably don't have any sort of qualification, and therefore it is that sector of the market. In Newham, I think that is slightly lower than the average, certainly across London, in terms of only 29 out of 150 approximately agents that are members. It is much higher in other parts of the country, and certainly much higher in other parts of the capital. But just as Fiona said, it's that small minority that tarnish the whole sector. The vast majority of agents want to do the best job they can for both their landlord clients and their tenant customers. The problem is that there is that small element, and even a small agent is still managing hundreds of properties, that tarnish the whole sector and bring the whole sector down.
Now, do you think that these changes, which are pretty comprehensive, client money protection, the ban on tenants' fees, membership of a trade body, and also having to complete a course, do you think that they're justified? Do you think that's all needed?
Absolutely. We led the campaign for mandatory client money protection, and the coalition of organisations, including London Trading Standards, including the National Landlords Association, everybody was in support, and we are very pleased that in a few weeks' time it is going to come into force. There have been a few hiccups down along the road, don't get me wrong, but when isn't there, when something new comes in? But that is an absolute essential. Yeah. We estimate that on any given day, letting agents are holding probably around £2.7 billion worth of other people's money. Arla on its own, its members are holding approximately £1.6 billion of other people's money. Now, you wouldn't go on holiday unless you've got an Abtor or an Atoll logo that you knew you'd get your money back if something went wrong. Why would you rent a property as a tenant? Why would you let a property as a landlord without that same level of protection?
Yes, absolutely true. And there's a massive sums of money, aren't there? It's very interesting to hear that. Adam, I want to bring you in on this because I'm really fascinated to hear how agents are feeling about the changes. What is the mood out there?
Well, on client money protection, I think everyone agrees that to allow an agent to hold hundreds of thousands of pounds, sometimes millions of pounds in a client account without proper protection is just wrong. It should never have been allowed to happen. There is also concern, though, that all of the protection seems to be focused on the tenants, whereas the landlords are equally vulnerable and seem to have been almost ignored in some of the way that the legislation is being drafted, that it's very easy for an agent to hold back the rent for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks and tell the landlord that for whatever reason they can't pay them immediately the rent is received. And there again, there's a huge opportunity for agents to use that as cash flow or use it for high living and other inappropriate purposes. And I think it's very important that just as the tenants are protected, the landlords are given the same level of protection, against theft of their resources, because not all landlords are multi-millionaires and can afford to take that sort of loss.
Well, that's a good point, Adam. And some landlords are concerned that agents will be increasing their fees, and then there's talk that landlords will need to put up rents that will affect tenants ultimately. I'm always a bit sceptical about that, because of course the market governs rents, and landlords can't just shove up rents like that. But
that's a wholly separate issue, which I thought we were going to come on to a little bit later. But the client money protection is sensible legislation, but it has to protect landlords as well as tenants.
I thought it did, that it does. My understanding is it would landlords could claim from it as well as tenants if they lost out.
But they are still agents are still able to withhold rent for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and use that money to fund their cash flow, which is not right. And at a time when they are, if there is money missing from the tenant account, when the CMP comes in, it will be even more tempting for the agents to try and replace money that they shouldn't have taken from tenant deposits by using the rent roll to fund their cash flow.
I'm not sure entirely I would agree with you on that one, Adam. And the CMP rules do cover landlords. Mm. Arla scheme has always paid out to landlords who have lost rent monies, until now up to a certain cap. But from here on in, when the new rules come into force, it will be effectively unlimited. One of our main rules within our CMP scheme for Arla members is they are not allowed to do the practice. And I am aware of agents that do that practice, Adam, don't get me wrong, but certainly our members have to put it into a client account. They are not allowed to. Effectively, what you're talking about is rob Peter to pay Paul to keep the business going. Now, certainly something that I am worried about when the tenant fees ban comes in and agents start losing up to 20% of their turnover, that they will start to, I'll just borrow a little bit out of the client account this month to make payroll, and then month after month after month after month
next
till
month
it's all
it's
gone.
The VAT, and next month it's their tax bill,
exactly.
And so it goes on. And it is often the agents who are not ARLA registered who are the most likely to engage in this sort of practice. That's certainly what happened in Scotland.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you entirely.
Well, let's come on more specifically to the tenants' fees ban. I'd like to ask you about that, Fiona. Can you tell us about, what are the main components of this ban, and also just summarise for us what's happening with client money protection as well?
So with client money protection, as David said, that's coming into force on the 1st of April. So letting agents will have to be a member of a client money protection scheme. And if they're not a member of a scheme, then Trading Standard Services, it's a duty for them to enforce. And they have the power to issue civil penalty notices, financial penalty notices, as they do with the previous legislation that came into force with redress, the requirement to be a member of a redress scheme and the requirement to display fees, etc. And the maximum they can penalty that can be issued for client money protection is £5,000. And obviously the local authorities will set that penalty, and it's a two-stage process. So once you've issued a penalty, there is an appeal to the local authority, and then there's an appeal to an external tribunal. And all the new legislation follows that model, really. So,
and on the tenants' fees ban, almost all fees are going to be banned, aren't they, apart from some very specific ones that are laid down?
Yeah, I mean, that's very different because it's talking about banning. So, and it applies to landlords as well as letting agents. So it's not just letting agents it applies to. So it's bringing in, I suppose, there's been a debate for a long time now, for about 3 or 4 years about this.
Just to be clear on this, deposits are going to be restricted to 5 weeks' rent.
Yes.
The holding deposit is going to be maximum of 1 week, and there's going to be a laid down procedure for that.
Yeah, and that's new, which is interesting, I think, that they've actually gone into that field to look at holding deposits as well, really. Yeah.
And then also, there are only going to be two situations where the landlord can charge the tenant, yeah, whilst they're in the tenancy and in the property.
So that's for a lost key or other security device, and then for late payment.
Okay. Now, David, you've already mentioned that agents rely on up to 20% of their profits or their business. They rely on tenants' fees for that income. How are they adapting their business models?
I would say, there are actually two on top of the rent pay, the late rent, rent arrears and lost keys. There is also surrender of tenancy.
Oh, yeah, well,
and then
change,
they
yeah.
And then novation of contract as well, such as change of share, where those will also be permitted under the tenant fees.
Oh, right. I'm glad you've clarified that, because I know there have been lots of changes with amendments, haven't there? So,
they have indeed.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how are agents going to deal with it? Well, yes, to start with, about 20% of the industry's turnover comes from tenant fees. We commissioned Capital Economics, a leading market research agency, a couple of years ago, to actually do an economic impact assessment on the ban. That found that the lettings industry turns over about £4 billion a year. Of that, approximately 20%, or £700 million, comes from tenant fees. In the most plausible scenario of how agents are going to deal with the ban, what we're expecting is agents will lose about £200 million a year in England in terms of turnover, and that's likely to see about 4,000 job losses across the sector. Landlords are likely to see their costs from letting agencies go up in the order of about £300 million, and tenants are likely to see an increased rent of about £103 per tenant per year. And therefore, I think this is an interesting one. At £103 per tenant per year, if you are a tenant that moves on a regular basis, a student, a young professional, for example, you're probably actually going to see a saving as a result of the ban. If you are somebody that moves less frequently, so low-income people, families particularly that want to set down roots, disabled people as well, who generally stay in properties much longer that have been adapted for their needs, they're the ones that are actually going to see increased costs than if they stayed the same. The over-under is 2.5 years. If you stay in your property for less than 2.5 years, you're probably going to see a saving. If you stay in your property for more than 2.5 years, it's probably going to end up costing you more at the end. And when we think that yesterday the government issued its survey of English housing, its annual report on housing costs, and it came out that the average private rented tenancy now is 4 years and 1 month, at which point the majority of people are actually probably going to end up worse off as a result of the ban rather than better.
Yes, let me ask you, Adam, on this. I was reading that a study by insolvency firm Moore Stevens back in July 2018 said that 7,000 estate agents were showing signs of financial distress, and said that the introduction of the fees ban could be the kind of straw that breaks the camel's back, in a sense. Are you finding that this is what's driving some agents to consider moving on, so to speak?
Well, it certainly has been a motivating factor in some people selling, but when you do the mathematics of it, the typical letting agent might make a profit of 15% of turnover. And, you know, on David's figures, the tenant fees are 20% of their turnover. So if the agents do nothing and just carry on as they are now, they will never make a profit ever again, which is clearly inconceivable. And what's interesting is the way that the burden is falling disproportionately on different types of agents. Now, if you are an established agent with a mostly managed book and you've got a sales team with the skills to go out and justify that your headline fees are more expensive than other agents because you do a better job, your add-on fees are much lower. And with an agency like that, the tenant fee is only about 5 or 10% of turnover. Now, at the other end of the scale, there are a lot of very poor quality agents who entered the market in 2008 when the sales market collapsed and they needed lettings to shore up their income. They had nothing to offer the public other than we're cheaper than the other agents. And then they had to make up for their cheap fees to landlords by abusing the tenant fees, which is how we got into this situation in the first place. And for that type of agent who are mostly looking after property on a let-only basis, the tenant fee is more like 30% of their income, sometimes 40% of their income. And they cannot survive. So what I see happening is the let-only agents will disappear. A lot of them will either have to switch to a monthly collection service where they're charging for managed or part-managed services with monthly fees. The agents that do that will increase their income to the point that they can still make a reasonable profit in the sector. But the very cheap agents who are charging 30, 40% from tenant fees and working on a let-only basis, I think will disappear. And we'll see a very different industry in 2 or 3 years' time as a result of that.
Is this effectively going to drive out the bottom end of the market, do you think, Adam? Or is that a bit too crude a way to look at it?
No, I think it will. That the whole letting industry is becoming more sophisticated, it is harder and harder for landlords to do it themselves. I mean, there are 125 regulations that you now have to comply with before a tenant can move into a property. Now, most landlords don't know what those regulations are. Most poor quality letting agents don't know what they are. And in view of the complexity of the legislation, it is right and proper that the people who are letting properties are doing so on a managed basis where they can protect their clients from the legislation that they're unaware of and the consequences, and they'll be charging a proper fee for that service. And the ones that are just finding a tenant and leaving the landlord to do everything else, it's probably not an appropriate service for landlords anymore. And, you know, landlords that do that, who are not aware of the legalities of what they're doing, will find that they're hit with huge fines, to the point that they will realise that they do need the service of a professional agent to protect them.
Okay, well, you're listening to Inside Property with me, Richard Blanco. Today we're looking at letting agent reform with my guests Fiona Exley, who is a Senior Trading Standards Officer and speaks for London Trading Standards, David Cox, CEO of Arla Property Mark, and Business Transfer Agent Adam Walker. Now, David, a cynic might say that Arla Property Mark stands to gain quite a lot from these changes, because hopefully lots of people will need to become members of Arla Property Mark and, you know, use some of your products and services. And, you know, some agents might say it's a bit of a gravy train, actually, for some of the trade bodies.
I don't think I'd actually characterise that it like that at all. We have been campaigning for a greater regulation of the sector for a long time, because we do believe in making sure that agents are operating at the highest possible levels. And just as Adam said in response to his last question, you know, it is those agents at the bottom that are bringing us all down, those ones that have been charging extortionate tenant fees to reduce the costs to landlords and still make their businesses profitable. The silver lining of the tenant fees ban is getting rid of those agents, because they're not going to be able to keep their business models operating when they lose the tenant fees ban. Just as Isabel Thompson in her statement earlier, it's about levelling the playing field. Now, what we want to see is a qualified workforce. And yes, we do provide qualifications to the sector. We provide training and standards to the sector. Yes, we may gain more members as a result of that. I'm very pleased about that, because that way we are making sure that we are holding more of the industry than we are at the moment to account.
Well, let me stay on a cynical mode, Fiona, and ask you, you know, just how capable is Trading Standards going to be of enforcing some of these new measures? I remember back in 2014 when the redress scheme was brought in, very few local authorities fined letting agents for not being members of the redress schemes.
I think it's true, when the legislation first came in, that was a completely new area of work for Trading Standards. I don't know whether many of your listeners are aware, but Trading Standards enforce a whole range of consumer protection legislation. And obviously the letting sector was completely new to them, really. And obviously we're enforcing in a time of kind of significant lack of resources in local authorities generally. So, and that particularly hits enforcement bodies. I think what's happened, and I particularly want to emphasise our experience in London really, is that there probably was a core of us only in like late 2014, 15, probably four or five London local authorities that were on board straight away, because it was a real priority where they worked, and started enforcing straight away. And through this London regional group that we've got, the lettings group we've got, more and more people have got on board. In London, I think we're kind of enforcing a lot more than out of the region, really. So there's been, you know, significant a number of financial penalties have been issued, and fines have been issued. Not to say that that's kind of universal, but I think it's kind of improved, you know, dramatically, really. So from then, when there was only about four authorities kind of involved, now, you know, the survey we did last year, we had 26 out of the 33 boroughs in London taking part. And I'm pretty confident within London that some, you know, every authority will do something. They will obviously respond to complaints. Whether they proactively go out and find issues is another matter, because that's an issue to do with resourcing. So that's where I really think what's important is awareness. So because there's a lack of resources for Trading Standards, I think nationally there needs to be a big national campaign about both these pieces of legislation, which should be led by the government and obviously trade bodies as well, kind of getting on board to do with that, to make sure that people are aware of it from the business perspective, but also that tenants about reporting it, because we need eyes and ears out there. There's not very many of us, so we need people to report that to us, really, so that we know that, you know, where it's happening, really.
Yes, my niece was just charged a £400 renewal fee, actually. She's a student in Oxford, and it's to renew her tenancy on the 1st of September, and she had no idea that the fees ban was coming in June. And, of course, if she'd held back until June to pay, or not pay, you know, she wouldn't have had to pay. And it seems to me there's a big task there to actually inform the public about these changes.
Sorry, Richard, she would have been charged if it was for a renewal fee. So it's only new tenancies that are banned from the 1st of June. Any fees associated with existing tenancies, such as the renewal situation that you've just outlined, they would still be chargeable up until the 31st of May 2020. Sorry, they would have still been chargeable.
Oh, they would. Okay, I didn't know that. And it's a lot of these technicalities that a lot of us are not aware of yet. Some of these changes, David, have been frustrating because actually the NLA fought for that deposit cap to be 6 weeks, and then it was suddenly changed to kind of befriend a few opposition Brexit voters, I think, at the beginning of December, down to 5 weeks. And it makes a lot of us in the sector feel like we're sort of political pawns, really, in the game that the government are playing, and they're really not taking a lot of this stuff seriously. I mean, the other concern is that the length of time it's taking for the broader regulations to come in as well.
I think you're absolutely right, actually. As we came up to the third reading in the House of Lords, one of the final parliamentary stages of the Tenant Fees Bill, it was political horse trading. The government wanted to keep it at 6 weeks. Labour had put in an amendment at 4 weeks. In the House of Lords, Labour have a majority. So had the Labour front bench pushed it to a vote in the House of Lords, they would have won and it would have gone down to 4 weeks. At which point, the 5 weeks is literal horse trading. You want four, we want six, let's compromise at five. That's exactly what happened. There was no policy or evidence base behind that. It was pure politics.
And if you add that to the fact that we've had three housing ministers in the last 12 months, I mean, we're all feeling very frustrated about the way the sector's being treated. But tell us a bit more about the timescale in terms of the broader regulations, because you're part of the working group, aren't you, David, that's working on it?
Yes, I am. So if we think the then Secretary of State for Housing and Communities and Local Government, Sajid Javid, now Home Secretary, announced at Conservative Party conference in 2017 that he was going to regulate letting agents, require mandatory qualifications, continued professional development, and several other bits and pieces. We've now had the launch of what is called the Regulation of Property Agents ROPA Working Group. That started end of last year. It's got a report on recommendations across a whole range of issues to the minister by the end of July this year. Looking at sort of parliamentary timescales, July 19 is a recommendation to the minister. If we're lucky, we'll get a consultation out of the government probably autumn this year. That will close end of this year, beginning of next year. The government will then need to consider it. That will probably take another 6 months. So we're looking at the earliest legislation going into Parliament, probably sort of autumn 2020. It's got to go through its parliamentary session and passage. That's probably another 9 months coming out, if we're lucky, just before the summer recess 2021. We've then got probably tendering exercises for approved professional bodies, approved qualifications. That'll probably take another 6 months. And then that's when the regulations will come in. So if we think the next general election at its latest is May 2022, we may just be lucky enough to have all the laws in place at that point in time. Then there's going to need to be some sort of lead-in time to allow agents to actually get qualifications. So I don't think this is really, we're not talking 2022, 2023 is when this will come into force in reality.
And given this current parliament is somewhat precarious, isn't it? Who knows if it will make it, I guess.
Well, we have been here before, haven't we? If we think back to almost 15 years ago, the then Deputy Prime Minister John Prescott was all in favour of regulation and it all died a death. So let's see what happens. It was in the Labour manifesto in 2010 that they were going to impose regulation on letting agents. They lost. And we are effectively 2 decades later and we're still having the same discussion.
There you go. So it might not happen, Adam. What do you think? Do you think it's going to make it through Parliament?
Well, I think there are two ways that tighter regulation of agents will be achieved. The first is by making a professional qualification mandatory to practice as a letting agent, which would, I think, be the holy grail. Whilst that is working its slow way through Parliament, the reality is that a lot of the small and less able and less experienced agents are getting out of the sector because they are so terrified at the size of the fines that they face. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one simple mistake now can lead to a fine of many thousands of pounds. And, you know, this is what is chasing them out of the industry. And, you know, perhaps it's proper that it should. But I have a feeling that a lot of those small agents will be driven out a long time before the mandatory qualifications come in.
Can we look into our crystal balls, Adam, into the future of the future shape of letting agents? Are we going to see a much smaller number of bigger players? How is
that? Undoubtedly. Yeah.
Are we? Yes. And how is that going to interact with online? You know, what percentage of business is going to be online? What's going to be on the high street? I'm thinking of places like Cranford Road in Ilford, which used to be full of lots of butchers and bakers and so on, and is now full of letting agents. And it's true as well of places like Stratford High Street. These are places in East London where I have my property business. Are we likely to see a lot of those letting agents leave the high street?
Yes, I think there are two different things going on here. I mean, if you look at the mathematics of it, if you are running a letting agent that does £500,000 a year of turnover, if you're lucky and that business is well run, you might make £100,000 profit out of that business. Now, if you sell that business to somebody who operates a business next door, then with all the economies of scale and no premises to pay, no advertising, no other costs, they will make about £250,000 profit out of managing that book from within their business. So the economies of scale are so enormous in lettings that there is going to be an irresistible urge for letting agents to merge into bigger and bigger and bigger firms. And a town that at the moment has got 50 letting agents trading from 50 different premises, each employing 5 people, will end up in 10 years' time with 5 letting agents employing 50 people trading from 5 premises. And even those premises will probably not be on the high street because no one visits anymore. They'll be on industrial parks on the outskirts of town where people can park outside because most of the work is done online or on the telephone. So it will be a very, very different business in 10 years' time.
Now, this could make your job significantly easier, I guess, Fiona, if you've got fewer agents to deal with. But how do you see the future of the sector?
Well, I definitely agree. There's a huge range of different sizes of letting agents. The local authority I work at currently, there's very, very tiny let agents that just, you know, are particularly dealing with the specific communities, I think, which is an issue. And I do sometimes wonder how they make business. But I would say that often they're not the worst agents. They're often quite well run. They may be small agents and they can be quite well run. And in fact, some of them, picking up on the discussion earlier about tenant fees, there are agents that already don't charge tenants fees and are managed to cope with it. So the debate, you know, there are people doing it already. So there is an economic model there, really. And I'm not sure really who the bottom of the market is. Who is the bottom of the market that was mentioned earlier, really? But I do think it will change. I mean, I'm not an expert. Obviously, I'm an enforcement officer and that's my experience. I'm not expert in the economics of it. But the kind of my experience is that there is an awful lot of agents and there's a lot of agents that I entirely agree with what David said. They need to be more professional. You know, I can't count the number of times that I've had to explain what client money protection is. And, you know, this is people that have set up in business and they don't understand what a client money protection scheme is. And I've repeatedly had to explain that to them. And that, as you know, I said earlier, they're taking massive amount of money, really. I think one thing that, can I just pick up one thing that will help in terms of enforcement, because I think that is a crucial issue, really, is that the government has committed to having a lead authority to do with letting agents. And it's something that my colleagues in Trading Standards have kind of campaigned for in any consultation that we've responded to, particularly over the recent years. We said there needs to be somebody that leads on this because there's a lead body for estate agency, but not for letting agents. I think that will be good in terms of being able to give kind of a, it's going to have statutory, we're going to have statutory guidance, which we haven't before. So when the previous legislation came in, there was very little guidance given to local authorities or to businesses. So we're going to, there's a commitment to have statutory guidance with the legislation, which will be good. And there's a commitment to have a lead authority, which I think will be excellent. I think there could be more. I think the resources that's going to be given to that lead authority is quite limited. So it probably will be only like, you know, a manager for that service and three case officers for the whole of the country, which in my, you know, mind isn't enough, really. But it's a start. And I think we welcome that start, that they've the government have said that they're going to have a lead authority for that. And I think probably we need to look at other ways of kind of, particularly in the first year, to do with the new legislation about getting out in the regions and perhaps doing some regional working to do with enforcement. And there being money for that, really, and doing regional enforcement and money for like awareness raising as well.
David, let me give you the last word on this, because you know, I'm very interested to hear what your predictions are for the future of the letting agent sector. And you know, I'm also interested in your comments on what's going to happen with online business. And as we know, the market is not particularly buoyant, particularly in London at the moment, for letting agents. So where do you see the next 10 years panning out?
So, and firstly, I would completely agree with everything that Fiona has just said. If you go back to that 2015 regulation, there was no guidance for agents produced whatsoever, and the guidance for enforcement authorities was tacked on as an annex to guidance for a completely different piece of law. Yeah. How did anybody expect them to actually enforce it properly? We're very pleased with the lead enforcement authority concept as well. We are looking forward to the appointment and working with that lead enforcement authority in the same way that we do on the sales side of Property Mark with the National Trading Standards Estate Agency team, the lead enforcement for sales. Enforcement of all these laws and all other laws is going to be key, because let's be honest, we all know that there are going to be agents that will continue charging tenant fees on the 1st of June. There will be agents that won't get become members of a client money protection scheme. One thing, we get an awful lot of intelligence from our members about bad practice in the industry. We pass that on to local trading standards. Let me give you an actual example. Just before Christmas 2017, I received intelligence from an agent, video and photo evidence up to pretty much a criminal standard of proof of 13 agents on his estate agent row who weren't correctly displaying their tenant fees. We contacted the local trading standards, passed on all the information and intelligence that we had received. Nothing happened. If this is going to work, it's got to be properly enforced. And it's not really trading standards' fault. They haven't been given the money to actually seed fund that enforcement activity by government. Now, government are giving £500,000 to seed fund tenant fees enforcement, and then after that, the fines coming in should keep the enforcement going. That isn't enough money, and therefore what I am worried is going to happen is all professional agents will stop charging fees on the 1st of June, the rogues will continue operating under the radar with impunity. That cannot happen, and that goes very much to the future. We need a much better regulated sector. We need professional qualifications. We need to get rid of the rogues. The only way this is going to work is if it is together. Qualified agents managed by the professional bodies that deal with 95% of the industry. And we are set up to be able to do that. That last 5%, we are not going to have the statutory powers to go and do anything about it. It's about working with our colleagues in trading standards and environmental health to go out and use the statutory powers that they have to hit those, the worst, as hard as possible. And as with all laws, and particularly in the property industry for landlords as well, the only way we're actually going to get rid of the bottom end of the sector is make it so punitive, the consequences of unlawful activity, that it actually acts as a deterrent and they don't do it. And that's what I want to see a sector in 10 years' time, properly regulated, properly managed and properly enforced.
Okay, well, thanks very much to my guests, David Cox and Fiona Exley and Adam Walker. That's it for this programme. You can find all 20 editions of the programme and get in touch with us via our website, which is insideproperty.org.uk. And thanks to you for listening.